Welcome once again to the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour, brought to you by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at luckymojo.com. I'm your announcer, Papa Newt of PapaNewt.com in Omaha, Nebraska, and in just a moment, we'll be joined by our co-host, Catherine Ironwood of LuckyMojo.com in Forestville, California, and Contraman of ContramanConsulting.com in Mission Viejo, California. This week, we'll be joined by a special guest from the Association of Independent Readers and Rootworkers, Miss Elvira of Elvira.com in Northwestern Arkansas, bringing us the discussion on enchanted magical jewelry. Together, they will give you an in-depth look at this subject and then provide a related free spell near the end of the program. But first, let's catch up with our co-hosts, Catherine Ironwood and Contraman. Miss Cat?
Hi, Papa Newt. Well, we got off to a little bit confused start here due to being a little late. And the reason we were late was I was down at the station making sales to customers. And I had to be fished out of there and brought back here, still awaiting my tea. So it's nice to be here as always. We are doing very well with the new shop, the station. I have promised photos, but I'm still waiting for more carpentry and some rugs. So I want to thank all of our patrons for being patient with us while we keep on turning out these Patreon pages, which they pay for, which go to support things like this radio show. Thank you to all my patrons. You've all been so good. If you like our shows, please comment. Please subscribe. Please join us live in chat on Sundays if you can. All right. Our topic today is enchanted magical jewelry. Now, we've written some books about this, and I know that Newt will give us some links, and that will be great. The book that Papa G and I did on amulets, charms, and talismans, which is called How to Use Amulets, Charms, and Talismans in the Hoodoo and Conjure Tradition, is a good starting place for anybody, and he's going to put a link through to it. And that book is based on something, a project that I've been working on since the 1990s, called the Lucky W Amulet Archive. And if you're interested in amulets and in the archive, which is illustrated, you can go to amuletarchive.org. And you can follow along as we do this show when we talk about a four-leaf clover amulet or a Solomonic seal amulet or whatever it might be. You can find many of them illustrated in the Amulet Archive. So this has been a part of my work for many, many years. My collection of amulets is kind of what started everything at Lucky Mojo. And so that's where we're at. Elvira works very well with magical jewelry as well. And she's going to guide us on a tour of how she prepares them. Contraman, say hi.
Hello, hello.
There you are. Okay, I've got my tea. I've got my rundown.
Very excited for this topic.
Yeah, well, and it's one that you know also very well and we'll all contribute. So I'm going to say, hello, Elvira, down in Arkansas.
Down in Arkansas, I guess.
Welcome.
I am. Hello, mm-hmm. Hello.
Yeah. Take it away and tell us about enchanted magical jewelry, what it is, why we want it, how we make it, how we buy it, how we prepare it, and how we enchant it.
Very exciting. So basically, I'll kind of give a little set here. When I started looking into this as an actual making a piece of jewelry out of it, it's because I had so many different pendants and enchanted little items that, you know, I had bought and worn, and then they wound up in my jewelry box and, you know, made a giant pile. And one day I just looked at them and I thought, how can I do something with this? So the idea is like making a sentence with what you have and putting it together. So for me, that's what started the course of what I've been doing with charms and necklaces and even bracelets. But basically, Magical jewelry or enchanted jewelry is a way of holding the qualities to influence the wearer, obviously yourself, and it, your field in different ways, either for manifestation or protection or personal energies that you want to enhance. And so it's basically done as a wearable and intentional tool, symbolic tool designed to influence through these different aspects that you're choosing. And it has a lot of interesting things because it becomes personalized. So sometimes you can even use items that have been passed down through your family if you feel that it's, you know, something you want to do. For instance, a particular pendant that was very positive in the line of your family. So there is that to also consider. And using talismans and gemstones to, you know, utilize this. And of course, there are a lot of different modalities that you can use. You can use metals, you can use organic material to construct it with the idea of putting these items together. So for me, it was like looking at the idea of where even the history comes from. So you've got different cultures that have utilized it from the Egyptians all the way, you know, even back Babylonian times, all the way to, you know, the Europeans and even into, you know, the more modern American traditions. Do you have anything you want to add, Miss Kat?
Yeah, I do. I want to talk about ancestral inherited jewelry. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of use of ways to contact ancestors, but very few people consider the jewelry that they wore. If you have a locket, for instance, of your grandmother, or if you have a ring, if the ring is too big for you or too small, you can take it to a jeweler and have it resized. It's not impossible with most pieces of jewelry, but you don't have to wear it all the time. But there are people who will always be wearing a piece of jewelry that somehow connects to an ancestor whose strength they want or whose intelligence or power that they want. When you do that, I find it important to dedicate that and acknowledge it. Don't just, you know, put on your grandmother's locket, but get a picture of her if you have one and set the locket out. And then, you know, say a little invocation, come asking her to come, saying, I know you always wore this. And as I wear it, I'm going to wear it in memory of you. Keep your spirit close to me. There are people who have many pieces of jewelry that come from different parts of the world also. And that people collect jewelry or amulets or charms, tokens or talismans that they found while traveling that have a memory for them. This was when I climbed the Matterhorn. This is when I went surfing in Hawaii. Whatever they did, this is where I, you know, lay on the grass and looked at the sky. Those types of things also enhance your own power because they are representatives of things that you have done that were personally powerful. Mm-hmm. So these two types of enchanted jewelry, ancestral and personal, are not necessarily anything that would look like an amulet or a talisman. They might not, you know, have a seal of Solomon on them. They might not be in the form of a four-leaf clover or a wishbone or anything. They just might be something that you picked up. And those are just as valuable as those pieces of amuletic jewelry that were made, purpose made, to represent a certain spiritual, religious, or somehow a cultural event or emotion. So that's what I have to add. How about you, Conjurman? What do you have to say?
Yeah, I mean, there's, when we talk about enchanted magical jewelry, they come in sort of a variety of different forms. I mean, the oldest are found in Mesopotamia and in Egypt. In Egypt, they're known as the meket, and mekets are actually amulets. So they're mostly protective. But, and same thing in Mesopotamia, this idea that they generally ward off some type of entity or force from your persons. By the Hellenistic period, they're also associated with actual spirits themselves, like they can actually house things, which is also found in Jewish, Christian, and Islamic thought. For example, my ring, quite famously, is my jinn ring.
Mm-hmm.
Which Miss Cat has seen and others have seen, and I've worn it for years, but it's also an ancestral heirloom that has been passed down in my family for, I don't know, well over 1,000 years. And so this is an old tradition, and the idea of jewelry is combines two things. One, precious metals and precious items, or something that is precious to you. So either the object is precious because it's got, you know, gold on it, or it's got a semi-precious stone on it, like turquoise or garnet or something, or it's precious because of a memory, like Miss Cat mentioned, like it was precious to your family, and the idea that it has spiritual value. So there's a sort of monetary component or a social component to it or a psychological component to it, and then there is a spiritual component to it, and that's what produces its power. And then there's varieties of symbols and colors and meanings associated with each one. But we have one of the cool things about this topic is probably more than any other form of magic that we've talked about, we have more historical documentation of magical jewelry than literally any other form of magic. We have rings that go back thousands of years. We have necklaces that go back thousands of years. We know the stones that they used. We know that the symbols that they carved. We even know the prayers that they said over them. So this is one of those topics that's so rich in its lore, but there are some commonalities across cultures, and they generally revolve around some type of notion of preciousness to the material and some type of symbology associated with it.
Yeah, and wherever we find something that is being used in magic, which the making of which is beyond the skill of normal household domestic arts or carpentry arts, particularly when we're talking of jewelry, there is an added layer with many of these amulets or charms, and that is the jeweler. Mm-hmm. And there are jewelers who specialize in making magical jewelry. Mm-hmm. And there are jewelers who simply are just turning it out. You know, it's just another gold band wedding ring. And yeah, I'll engrave in it, you know, the date or whatever. But after it's been worn by the grandmother all her life, it's now grandmother's. So grandmother basically enchanted that by wearing it. However, or mother or great-grandmother, whoever it might be. However, there are jewelers, and I'm going to mention one of them, Dr. Jeremy Weiss, who makes jewelry and is a jeweler and descends from a family of jewelers, and he silversmiths, and he makes enchanted jewelry for people. And it can vary as something as simple as a little charm encased in resin, and he'll pour the resin, or he'll actually engrave, using a cutting tool into metal. So having a connection to a good jeweler is very important. Clifford Lowe, who wears a lot of amuletic jewelry, also makes jewelry talismans. And so if you want to go that route, it's going to cost more, but who's to say, you know, the added power or emphasis of the jeweler might make it better. On the other hand, if you find that a little bead that you bought in a bead store, you keep on looking at it and turning it over in your hand, and you're looking at it and you go, wow, this has a lot of mana, this has a lot of power in it, and you buy that little bead for a dollar and you keep on holding it and you go, this bead, I've got to wear this bead. It may already have power in it, and also your focus on it may bring more power into it. One way people empower such a thing that just came from a bead store would be maybe to set it under the sun for a day and then under the full moon for a night. Some people will put them in salt and let them, depending on the material they're made of, put them in salt to purify them and then set them under the sun and the moon. There are many ways to do that, but there is no one way to know if something is powerful or enchanted other than to hold it in your hand and feel it and feel if that bead has that power or that little charm necklace. So Elvira, how do you pick which things you're going to use?
Well, interesting. Basically, when I look at what I have, and obviously got a lot of things over the years, and I have bought them either for specific purposes or they were given to me or something. If it's a focus, for instance, I love dragons. And so if there's a dragon that I really feel strongly with, I'll make that the centerpiece. And then I will add on the sides and how I do it, because it's simple and it's nothing to do with, you know, smithery or any of that. But then I will add stones that kind of work with that. If I've got certain beaded stones that are, you know, on pendants, and then I will go ahead and check that. And I like to do it in like seven. So the center one is one and then three on the side. If I want, you know, because of the length of it, I don't want things dangling down my belly button. I've got too many things I can get them caught in. So, you know, I keep it up at my breast area. And, you know, basically I feel it. I look at it. I feel it. Sometimes I will do research and find out, you know, if I have several stones that are there or pendants, I may want to add the seal of Zadkiel, or I might want to add something else that is part of the sentence or the you know, for lack of a better word, spell that I'm putting together.
So you use stones and beads as spacers with like talismanic seals between, is that what you're saying?
Sometimes, not all the time. A lot of times I will have a beautiful aquamarine pendant that I use as one of the stones, in air quotes, as to be part of whatever it is. Or I have another one that's crystal with black tourmaline in it. And then I will go ahead and see, maybe there's if I'm using the dragon, I might see some kind of fire, you know, that I, elemental aspect of it to add. Or if it's an air dragon, I might use something like a wind, preferably not a tornado, because I do live in Tornado Alley. But it is something that I kind of start feeling what I do. Now, I have used stone beads as spacers between each one of the amulets, because, as I said, I do this really simply. I'll take one, the main one at the bottom. I'll basically take the cord that I'm using, and I'll string it on the cord. And when I get it to the center, I'll knot it. And then I can drop the beads in on either side and do the same thing when I get to, you know, the ones that I want on, you know, the next level. So as I say, this is real simple. I obviously was married to a jeweler, so I didn't have that for a long time. And it was, you know, it gave me some ideas, but I never really wanted to go into actually manufacturing that process. So this became a different way to do it. And in my opinion, for a lot of the people, I mean, I will be wearing these here in Arkansas, in, you know, Northwest Arkansas, and people will just gravitate. They'll go, oh, I love your necklaces. And, you know, I mean, it's because it's simple, but it's got a power to its own. Because again, the second part of doing this is in, you know, is doing the magical work around the blessing it, infusing it, having a purpose, and putting that into it as well. And that's the other, you know, half of making the magical jewelry. Just like, you know, the people you have talked about who are jewelers, they make it with a purpose, and not just because somebody said, oh, I want this cute ring to wear on my pinky because I think it looks great bling. You know, it's got they do it with a focus. So,
I'm going to go back to what you said about knots, because that's a very interesting thing. There's at the AIR workshop website, and maybe Newt can pull it up. Dr. Jeremy Weiss did a workshop on knot magic. And putting knots between beads is a way of sealing in a prayer. And it's a very powerful way to work. if you work with chain links, and I used to work for a jeweler making chain links, and there's a whole art to wrapping up the wire, cutting it down, and then linking. And there are different patterns for linking. And you need little, you know, chain nose pliers and all that stuff. If you can make your own chain, it's similar to making knots. You count out what you have. You're going to put beads in between. And each one of those marks a certain point of reference. So, but knots are great if you're using cord. Another thing that we haven't talked about yet is having different magical jewelry for different days of the week. I'm a great believer in that. Today I am wearing a jewelry that has on it citrine quartz, because that goes with the sun. And so I have on three bracelets on one hand, two bracelets on the other, and a necklace and a ring, and they all have citrine quartz in them. So I'm very sunny today. You'd almost think I was a Leo. And I started off by saying I was a little late getting here because down at the station, all of a sudden these customers came in to buy things. Well, citrine is also good for business on a Sunday, I guess. So citrine is known as a money-making stone. So I was all sort of like, I'm going to emphasize the sun. It's raining cats and dogs here, by the way. It is raining buckets. It's raining, you know, they opened up the dam in heaven and it's pouring down here. But I was going to go out all sunny for Sunday. So I have different sets of jewelry that I have that are matching. You know, one with amethyst. You know, I could go through them all, peridot. And I've mentioned these before. Each of them goes with a different day of the week. And that's also a nice way to work, because that keeps you kind of in tune with the planetary magic, which is another topic we deal with. Now, not all enchanted jewelry has anything to do with planetary magic or with ancient classical ideas of magic, because enchanted magical jewelry, as I said, could be just something you found and that you've enchanted. And it need not be symbolic in its the way it's formed. It literally can be. While I was talking, I was holding up a little clay donkey bead made of blue faience. And I've had this thing since the 1960s. It just sits here on my desk. I've never put it on a necklace. It's a bead, but it's enchanted. eventually, I probably will put it on a necklace, because I keep it in a little holder that's made for holding a crystal ball, very small crystal ball. It's about that size. We all have these things that we carry around. I would also like to mention enchanted buttons. I have quite a, and I'm talking both about pinback buttons, you know, like that might have a message on them, but also buttons that might be from a family member or might have some very strong meaning to you. The old brass buttons from your great uncle's conductor's uniform when he was a conductor on the New York, New Haven and Hartford Railroad. I'm holding the button right now. this did not come from my great uncle. He was not a conductor, but this is a conductor's button. And it was one of those things. I found it was there and I went, oh, and when you touched it, I knew who the guy was. It's like a spiritual connection point. I liked him. He was a neat guy. He was a conductor on the New York, New Haven and Hartford Railroad. And I went, I've got to have this. And so I've kept it. He's a spirit who I don't really know his name, but he was somebody who imbued his buttons with magic. So I'm a great believer in spiritualism as a way to look at the jewelry that you wear too. Where did it come from? Is this made of silver? Did it come from, you know, the Comstock mines? Did it come from Peru? Where is that silver from? What people mined it? You know, I'm always diving into the history of these things. And feeling the enchantment comes from centuries of people handling something. You know, pretty much all the gold we have is old gold that keeps on getting melted down and made into new things. Nothing happens to it. It just gets melted. Oh, we're going to make a new wedding ring with this gold, you know. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. when you think about how many people have handled that gold over the centuries, it's very powerful.
Yes, very much so. And one of the things I did want to mention is you, I think, has already been mentioned as, you know, an amulet. Amulet versus a talisman. A talisman is basically an object that is often imbued with the desire that you have in it, that you believe, you know, from spiritual means to have attract to you whatever you're focusing on, versus this is generic. I mean, we kind of, you know, have another way of looking. An amulet is usually to repel something. It is to protect from something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And sometimes people point out that amulets are just, they have an inherent ability where talismans are worked. So some mm-hmm. academics distinguish where, like, a talisman is something you've done something to it to make it powerful.
Right.
You've prayed over it, you've put symbols on it, you've got certain timings on it, you've carved it, you've put images, etc. An amulet can be something that is natural, that has inherent properties that are protective. So the magical property of stones, certain stones right. have certain qualities to them, and those can be amuletic, protective, healing, and whatnot. Okay. There's a lot of really cool amulets in history. I mean, I think Pliny lists like a dozen uses for the different stones, like emerald does this, and quartz does this, and diamonds do this. Like diamonds are supposed to be very good for your heart. So there's this really old, like, you don't even have to do anything with a diamond, but if you have a diamond on a ring or a necklace, it'll improve your heart condition.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. In the chat, Shiva just put in a word which was the wrong word, but he was close. He said revenants, but it's not revenants, it's remnants. And remnants, which is also called retentivity, is a part of it's part of science, but you know, it's like a magnetic remnant charge. But in dowsing, remnants is the contact magic of something that has been retained. Mm-hmm. And this is it's exactly what describes my little conductor's button. It mm-hmm. had I had no idea who this man was. I picked it up and it had remnants. It just like, whoops, there he was, you know? And
well, you're also a psychometrist who's quite famous.
Well, that's true. But, you know, psychometry, I'm going to tell you all, if you don't know that you're a psychometrist, give it a try. You might be one. Mm-hmm. It's one of those things that's almost impossible to talk about, because if you have it, you have it. If you don't, you can train yourself to it. But many people say, oh, is that what you're describing? Yeah, there's a word for it, psychometry. Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can we mention some of the symbols that are sometimes used with enchanted jewelry? Because I think this is it's a hot topic all in of itself, but because some of the images on the our screen actually has them, we should mention there's spirit sigils that are used, there are planetary mm-hmm. seals that are used, there are divine symbols, so the symbol of a god or goddess or a divinity, there's mm-hmm. in Hebrew and Arabic the names of God that are often used, then there's the alphanumeric components to it, where it's like certain numbers of certain significance, 3, 7, 9, 21, etc., but also magic squares, which you can see in one of the images, mm-hmm. the magic squares mm-hmm. imbue a certain name, phrase, or spirit by creating a cipher. And the cipher is that every single square has to add up to the sum of that name, or to the sum of that phrase, or to the sum of that spirit's name, and so on and so forth. And it's a way of encoding what they call quote-unquote dispersing the name among the squares. And the squares also have their own meaning based off of whether they're 3x3s, 4x4s, 5x5, 6x6. And in the Islamic world, where mathematics became huge, some of them go on to like 100x100s, which would be almost like Tibetan mandalas. There's a sort of meditative component in carrying them. But there's also natural symbology, right? So like, for example, A lot of Zoroastrian talismans and amulets include images of wings, because Ahura Mazda's far is associated with wings, or they include the image of fire. So one of the oldest Persian talismans we have is a little raised, is a coin with a raised dais, and there's a fire on top of it, symbolizing the fire of truth and Ahura Mazda.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we show on this thing a religious symbol, which is the pagan or Wiccan pentagram. Mm-hmm. That is used by a lot of people to identify their religion. But I'm going to put through a link. Here's a link to a Christian cross. And those are used as enchanted jewelry too. Mm-hmm. Because they are religious. Absolutely. And so this is a Christian cross. And
if anyone's really interested, the British Museum has this really cool magical cross. It's an amuletic cross made up of different stones. So what they did is they fixed into silver topaz, emerald, and a bunch of these. So it's very colorful, but it's designed specifically to heal and protect the individual. So the cross itself is powerful, and then the stones and their colors add further power.
Right. Mm-hmm. The cross that I just made a link to is also a very old one. This is probably from the Byzantine Empire. It has certain qualities about it that people would look at it as Middle Eastern. It has a ruby. It has emeralds. It's made of gold. It's pretty freaking cool. It has little dingly dangles that hang down off of, which is real Middle Eastern style. If you click that link, you'll see it. That kind of jewelry, and again, the color of the stones also has power and meaning. The stones themselves have power and meaning, but it's been put into a cross with red gold and gold. It's very nice. Yeah. So those kinds of symbols have a lot of meaning for people. They're inherent in the thing that it is they're wearing. Right. And you can tell a lot of from a person what their religious emblems are. Even those who do not wear images of their deities will still wear some sort of an image. Like Jews, for instance, will have the letter Chai, which is the number 18, and Chai also means life. And so you can give it to a girl, I guess, nowadays, but when I was young, the only boys got them. But the boy turns 18, young man turns 18, and he gets a Chai necklace to show that he's now ready for life. And they're very often made of gold. They would be a costly little charm to wear. Mm-hmm. But they are not a Star of David. They don't identify you as a Jew. It's just this weird little wiggly Hebrew letter. And yet, Jews will recognize it as being a religious ornament.
Well, and in many ways, you can say that during specific times in history, having something like that would be the secret way of people being able to determine who, you are and if you're part of their group.
Sure, sure.
So talismans as markers is a really interesting, both identifying your religion, but also like the age. So Ms. Kat, you mentioned that Jewish young boys get something at 18. There's also talismans, for example, in the Roman world, the bulla and the bulle, where all children wear them until they come of age. You find something similar in Middle Eastern culture, where children are often given an evil eye or hamsa hand that they wear until they get a little bit older. So there's these ways in which talismans are also associated with the different ages and stages within our life.
Yeah, I'm going to put up another picture here that you can click a link and get. This is an ancient Egyptian scarab ring carved of stone, and it's set into gold. And it says ancient Egypt. I would call this probably Hellenistic Egypt from the style of the twirled gold, but that's just my guess. I have no idea. These scarabs, of course, were a symbol for Egyptians of eternal life and the return of the sun. So setting this scarab image carved of stone into a golden ring showing it rolling the sun is very important. Phyllis Margaret Gabor said that she has sensitivity issues and doesn't like to wear pendants, but she wears rings. And so magical rings are very much a part of that kind of magic. There are people who have a ring that they always wear, like maybe a wedding ring or a particular luck ring, that they're also changing rings the same way that you might change pendants at different times. Also bracelets. Bracelets can be worn as wards to ward off evil. They can be worn as attractants. And there is a something called a charm bracelet, mm-hmm. where you have all of the little things on, like Elvira was talking about, the different charms that would represent different ideas or desires or different places you've been, whatever it might be. Charm bracelets used to be very, very popular. And I just recently saw a very sad little piece on YouTube, a guy who deals in old jewelry and stuff like that. And he had all of these silver charm bracelets, many of them, and he had them in a case. And he said the price of silver has gone up so high, mm-hmm. and these haven't sold. Right now, the prices on them are below the melt price of silver. He goes, should I raise the prices, even though they haven't sold, or should I just melt them all down? And I was horrified. Absolutely horrified. And I looked in the comments, and there were like 250 comments. Don't melt them. Don't melt them. Don't melt them. We'll buy them, please. The artistry that went into making those charm bracelets, although it's not au courant now, it's not as much appreciated now. You could look at them. Some of them were lucky. Some of them were for places, like all places in England or whatever it would be. And those charm bracelets were often part of the family ancestry too, because often they would be given to you one charm at a time by an elder, usually female relative. And on your birthday, you got a new charm for your charm bracelet. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And there's Pandora beads are done the same way. Yeah,
that's true. It's also a way of marking a history. For instance, you're talking about, you know, places you go. I mean, I did the same thing back when I was traveling in Europe. Different charms for different places I went wound up getting bought, and then eventually I came home and got them put on an actual silver charm bracelet.
Exactly. Yeah.
But it becomes, it's another version of history.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now I'm going to put up another picture from the Will Sigrist group, which, by the way, were published in the 1920s as cigarette cards. This is a bracelet, and it's a serpent bracelet. So this is an arm band, and it's ancient Roman, and it's made to wear around the biceps. And it's a fantastic piece of jewelry. And serpent armbands are particularly popular in the ancient Mediterranean. They just really, they tweaked people's imagination, I guess you could say. So the people who made these pictures were a husband and wife team named William Thomas Pavitt, who did the art, and his wife Kate Pitt Pavitt, who wrote the text that went with these old cards. Mm-hmm. And that they were based on a book they had written called The Book of Talismans, Amulets, and Zodiacal Gems, which was published by Ryder and Sons in 1914. And Ryder and Sons should be familiar to everybody, knowing the Rider-Waite-Smith tarot deck.
Yes.
Writer published occult books. But these cards came out in 1923. They were commissioned by the Will Sigrist Company. So when we look at this sort of stuff, we can see that by working with enchanted jewelry, we are part of a very, very long tradition of manufacturer and maintaining of enchanted gems. The Will's cards aren't all jewelry per se. I'm going to show another one, and I'm going to ask Conjurman to talk about this one. This is a gem which is called the Seven Greek Vowels. And it's a pendant. Do you know about the seven Greek vowels, Conjurman?
Very briefly. I took Greek in college and it kicked my ass.
Well, but as a charm.
I am familiar with the charm. So I can talk a little bit about this.
Yeah.
One of the fascinating things that we find in Greek magic, but it's actually Greco-Egyptian, if I can just point that out, that it is found in Egypt as well, is that letters themselves have numbers, or letters themselves have power. This eventually will inspire Kabbalah and Islamic Kabbalah, all of that. But it starts originally with the Greeks, this idea that the various letters have powers, and in particular, the vowels have power. And that the way that they're arranged can be associated with divinities, with powers, depending on their correct order. So these are, in academia, we call these magi voci. These are sort of words that we don't always know what they mean. We don't know, but we know that they were pronounced out loud. The seven vowels here are arranged in a triangular form, which likely inspires much later the abracadabra. In fact, mm-hmm. this may very well have been the source for what eventually becomes the abracadabra. And mm-hmm. the goal of this was generally health, happiness, and some form of protection. Now, we do know that these same exact vowels are also vocalized in conjurations, like people would actually say it out loud. And so this is tied to the idea in the ancient world that certain languages think of their script and their word as sacred. So Sanskrit, Greek, ancient Egyptian, Hebrew, Arabic, a few others, all imagine that their actual words and scripts are themselves magical. So if you were to write a single letter, for example, a single Greek letter or a single Hebrew letter, that it has certain potencies. And then the wise magician knows that in a particular arrangement of a particular set of letters, you can produce effects. In this case, these seven Greek vowels are the vowels which produce health, happiness, and protection for the individual when they're placed within this configuration.
Yeah. There's also seven of them, mm-hmm. and that relates to the seven sacred planets. Mm-hmm. And so that's a whole nother thing. But this kind of a talisman nowadays, I mean, who wears a talisman of the seven Greek vowels? It's like, what? But this was a very, very popular piece of enchanted jewelry to wear. And as you said, Conjurman, you would pronounce those sound of those vowels, and it would bring you all of these seven good things.
They also show up on like manuscripts, like people write them on actual paper as well. So in addition to like a charm that you wore, we found them on sort of paper like papyri talismans, which is quite interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's one of those that's just, you know, you just kind of go, whoa, okay.
It has a numeric, I don't know, like in Hebrew, it's Kabbalah or Gematria and Arabic, mm-hmm. Taruf, but the Greeks also have, I forget what it's called, it's P something, but mm-hmm. they have their own version. This also has a numeric component to it. There's a reason why it's not just seven vowels, but it's like the way they're repeated, 1, 2, 3, that arrangement actually adds up to something.
Yeah.
I would like to change just a moment, because I just noticed that in our chat, there was a person that asked about, what about cameos?
You know, very good.
Yes, and I know we're coming into our timing, so of course I'm looking at it going, you know, cameos are obviously beautiful items. I have one that my mother gave me that was from her mother, and it, you know, it's got history, but it's just, you know, it has nothing to do with a family member, but it can very easily be a way of keeping an image of an individual alive or part of the dynamics. But I did want to bring that up for general chit chat for a few minutes.
Yeah, absolutely. That comes under the idea of inherited things. People don't make cameos like that much anymore.
No.
All right. Well, the thing about all of this is, you are somewhat on your own. You're going to find things that call out to you, that will be important to you. you're going to find things that are of value to you. And when you do, don't let anyone tell you you don't know what you're doing, because all of these forms of enchanted jewelry have been popular throughout history. And we're going to come back with a free spell later and tell you how to make your own.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
LMC. You're listening to the LMC Radio Network, broadcasting out of Forestville, California, on the World Wide Web at LuckyMojo.com.
The LMC Radio Network is a media alliance that brings you the best in hoodoo, conjure, witchcraft, rootwork, new thought, spiritualism, and pagan ways. Our excellent shows include the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour with Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman, live on Sundays starting at 3 p.m. Pacific Time, with 90-minute free reading extravaganzas on the last Sunday of the month. The Crystal Silence League Hour with John St. Germain, The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love, Phoenix LaFay, Deborah Voith, and Lenora Brightmoon. And don't forget to check out our audio archives for additional shows. All our shows are available as podcasts via the Lucky Mojo Forum at forum.luckymojo.com. Find our shows on YouTube. Like and subscribe to our channel at youtube.com/LuckyMojoCurioCo. Sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company, online at luckymojo.com.
Support for this programming is provided by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and located online at luckymojo.com, and by the Association of Independent Readers and Rootworkers, AIR, a directory of ethical and authentic conjure practitioners, located online at readersandrootworkers.org, and by Hoodoo Psychics, the first psychic line run entirely by Hoodoo practitioners. Receive a reading with a trusted rootworker instantly. Call 1-888-4-HOODOO or visit hoodoopsychics.com. And by the Crystal Silence League, a free online prayer service of the Association of Independent Spiritual Churches, located online at crystalsilenceleague.org. And now it's time for our free spell segment with our special guest, Miss Elvira of Elvira.com in Northwestern Arkansas. Take it away, Miss Elvira.
Okay, so this one is set up for love, but we'll go for that in a minute. You'll take a 12 to 14 inch length of small leather cord. You'll pick out 7 items, can be charms, as we've talked about, or stone pendants, or even wire wrap stones with a little ring. Then what you're going to do is take one that you're focused on as the main one, put it at the bottom. You've taken the piece of cord, held it into a double, it's together, so you have a double length of them together. Take the one that's the center, put it on, loop it in, knot it. If you have other stones you want to add, then you can add those. Add the other 6 pendants or items, equally spaced on either side, 3 on either side. You can use beads for, and this is for love, you can use beads or stones that would be rose quartz, moonstone, and amber. And at this point, then once you've done that, you put it on your neck so you can see where the length is. You knot it at the top, take it off. You'll take your white tea candle, place it in the south, light it. You'll take the small glass of water in the west. You'll put the incense in the east and light it, and you'll take the small bowl of salt and put it in the north. You'll place the necklace in the center. You'll make sure that it sits there for a while you see what it is you're looking to imbue it with, which is love in some form of the situation. And then you can take it and gently put it, the incense, and waft it through the incense. Take it and put it to the fire, but don't put it in the fire, put it a little above so it gets a little warm. Then you can put it into a little sprinkle of water, and then if it's safe for the items, you can then take it and touch it to the salt, put it back in the center, and allow it to imbue itself with these energies and your desired outcome.
Wow, that's really nice. And, you know, what you've done here is really give a blueprint that can be expanded upon as necessary for what you are you know, culturally led to do or mm-hmm. spiritually led to do. But you cover all of the ways of blessing it with the candle, with the incense, that's and the water. That's beautiful. And salt, of course. It's very, very perfect. I love the way that you design spells, Elvira. You're a real, really good ceremonialist. Mm-hmm. So compliments on that part of your work.
By the way, the Greek alphanumerology is isopsephi. So there's a P in there, but it starts with an I.
Isopsephi. Okay, right. All right. Who were you commenting on somebody else's comment, I guess? I also want to say that you can have people make enchanted jewelry for you. Like I make amulets for people for protection. They buy the locket they want. They send me their hair, their name written on paper, and $100 in cash. I will then add herbs. I will add spices and things. And I will also make a little dram vial of protection oil for them. Pray over it, hold it on my altar, bless it and dress it in the way that Elvira mentioned, and then send it back to them. So I'm not actually creating the locket as a jeweler, but I'm saying to them, whatever you want, something that you like the way it looks, I can't pick a locket for you. What's so amazing to me, and I just received one today from a client, so many people choose hearts as the locket shape that they want for protection. I find it very charming. It's very interesting. There's another one I'm going to show through here from the Will Cigarette Collection, which is a Neolithic arrowhead, which is set in gold. And it was obviously found by somebody in Roman times, but it's much, much older, set in gold, and it's used for healing. Arrowheads were used to cut diseases. And so there you have the arrowhead charm. So the inherent warrior part of it, of the being an arrowhead, its ancientness, its unknown provenance, is then tamed and melded together with this gold holder that was made for it many, many, many years ago. Mm-hmm. So, all right. Well, thank you for that, Elvira. I'm going to give us we have our winners I have to announce. This week's Hoodoo Psychics Magic Mondays contest winner won a 15-minute free reading. And the winner is Tiffany Towns. Just go every Monday to Hoodoo Psychics and sign up at Facebook or Instagram. Facebook Fridays. Last week, we gave a Miss Michael author special with two books, Hoodoo Bible Magic by Miss Michael and Professor Porterfield, and Sneaky Tricks by Miss Michael and Catherine Ironwood. And there were three winners, Diana Blackthorne, Devin Hobbs, and Faywood Donna Moore. And each one of them won a pair of books. So just congratulations. Go to the Lucky Mojo Facebook page, message us with your address, and we will send you your books right away. All right. And remember, if you like these contests, be sure to enter them, because if we don't get entries, why, we might think that nobody wants these beautiful free prizes and they'll go away. So tell your friends, free readings at Hoodoo Psychics, free products at Lucky Mojo. And we're glad to do it. We're also very, very glad to be here on YouTube. We've gotten a lot of support. The number of viewers has gone up. Please tell your friends and let them know that they can tune on Sunday live. We also have a Lucky Mojo archive show every Friday. And we try to tie them in a little bit to what we're doing currently, but they might be just kind of random different. Also, The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron, which with Elvira, is broadcast every Monday, and we've been running through some of the older shows with Elvira and Phoenix, and pretty soon, within the next week or two or three weeks, we're going to be bringing in new shows, brand new shows with Elvira and Deb Voith and Lenora Brightmoon. And so that's Mondays, and if you like Elvira on this show, you're going to love her on her show, right?
Along and then we also all my others.
Right, and then we have the Crystal Silence League, which is about crystals. And we've been talking today about stones and enchanted stone jewelry and beads. And every week on the Crystal Silence League, a different stone is showcased by Reverend John St. Germain, and he talks about what that stone is used for. So all of these little occult and metaphysical shows tie together. So subscribe to the whole channel, and we'll always have something new for you. All right. I'm going to turn this over to Papa Newt, and he's going to bring us our announcements, and then I'll come back and maybe say goodbye.
Thank you, Miss Kat and Conjurman, and thank you, Miss Elvira of Elvira.com in Northwestern Arkansas for being our guest this week. We invite you to join us next week when we'll be holding another Reader's Extravaganza with a select panel of special guest readers. Don't wait. Sign up today at the Lucky Mojo Forum. Once again, we come to an end of another Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour brought to you by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California. You can find Miss Kat via the Lucky Mojo Forum at forum.luckymojo.com and Conjurman at conjurmanconsulting.com in Mission Viejo, California. I'm your announcer, Papa Newt, joining you from papanewt.com in Omaha, Nebraska. The Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour can be heard every week via YouTube live stream at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, and the shows are available at YouTube at youtube.com/@LuckyMojoCurioCo. For all of us at Lucky Mojo, I'd like to say thank you for being here and invite you to tune in once again next week at the same time when you'll hear the familiar strains of the Memphis Jug Band playing the Jug Band Waltz. Thanks, everybody. Goodbye.
Thank you, Papa Newt. The free reading extravaganza has proven to be very popular. You got to go to the forum and sign up. When you do, just post what your question is, and we will transport it through the magic of an electronic transmission, and it will be read out loud on the air. So if you like what we do, please tell your friends. I'm saying that one more time. We are on the air 4 times a week. We give away prizes at twice a week. We have thousands of free pages, and we're here to help the community. That's our job. And if you like what we do, you can also buy some products from Lucky Mojo and support us. You can also just donate directly a little bit of money to keep these YouTube shows coming. As you know, it takes people time and energy to make them. And also you can sign up with Patreon, where I write a new article every week. All right, everybody. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Bye.